two reasons. First of all, to the extent that this FAST letter was intended to impact the audiometric and audiological examinations, it clearly postdates the pendency of appellant's claim before the agency. So even if the secretary subsequently changed his mind, and for various reasons I can represent to you that he has not, this particular FAST letter would have no impact on the appeal before you today.
Well, if the secretary has not changed his mind, then wouldn't this FAST letter simply reflect the secretary's thinking, past, present, and future?
Your Honor, I don't mean to say that this FAST letter doesn't suggest that the secretary changed his mind. My understanding is, through inartful wording, and I'm not here to testify, Your Honors, please cut me off if my explanation crosses that line. But my understanding is this was an attempt to make sure that all the worksheets had 4.10 criteria where they didn't. It wasn't intended, according to the director of CMP, to apply. And the director of CMP understands that the wording was not precise in that regard.
Here's the specific wording that I think Judge Lance is concerned about, or at least wanted to get at, and which I am concerned about. And it says, under the audio and ear disease subsection, on both examination worksheets, examiners are asked to describe effects on occupational functioning and daily activities.
Right, Your Honor. And to the extent that Judge Lance or Your Honor is asking whether this represents what how the Secretary has always interpreted 4.10, I'd ask the Court to look at the precursor to these bullet points, number 2, saying these worksheets are changed in the following significant ways. So even if this were read to apply to the audiological examinations, it clearly reflects a new change. The Secretary is free, although I don't believe this was the Secretary's intent, the Secretary is free to change his position on a interpretation of a regulation. That being said, even if the Court were to read that as being the case, there is no retroactive effect where the pendency of a claim before the agency is no longer in effect.
Yes, but Counselor, wouldn't you agree that it would appear that we're all now discussing whether or not, a recitation of the test results is adequate, or whether it needs to be more than just recitation?
Your Honor, respectfully, no. I think the Secretary contends that while the Court's case law has suggested that that may ultimately determine what the rating is, the Secretary contends that the handbook and the internal procedures do require more of an audiological examiner. And that being the case, things like taking the history and asking for those sorts of indications from the claimants, it does satisfy 4.10. Further, Your Honors, back to my earlier point with your group as to the kind of the intrinsic satisfaction of 4.10 through the current rating schedule requirements. The rating schedule includes both Your Honors, I don't think calling it mechanical examination reflects Lendemann. Lendemann talked about mechanical application of the ratings, of the rating tables to the findings of the audiological exam. The audiological exam includes what I think could be fairly called a mechanical component, which is the hearing tone test, but it also includes a spoken word test. And Your Honors, the Secretary respectfully submits that when we're talking about scheduler ratings and we're talking about the average amount of impairment, that the spoken word test certainly helps to satisfy the criteria of regulatory section 4.10. So you have a purely mechanical item, and then you have perhaps what is more likely a real-world test. These tests are not, as Your Honor suggested earlier, unique to VA. These are the industry standards. Your Honors, the Secretary respectfully replies to appellant's assertion that there are better tests that among the parties, certainly, to determine what is the appropriate test. And the secretary routinely consults the experts in the field. This particular test is also the product, in large part, of ANSI, and I think that's the, I'm sorry, Your Honors, I thought I had memorized the, anyways, it's one of the standards, industry standards for creating this sort of material. That being the case, any challenges to the actual examination itself are probably inappropriate for consideration today. Certainly without
only as it relates to the rating schedule, not as it would relate to whether the board could assess, properly assess whether or not an extra schedule rating referral was appropriate.
Your Honor, that may be the case. Respectfully, the court's case law up till now and the secretary's own treatment of extra scheduler would still require the appellant to make some de minimis showing of why the rating criteria, and de minimis is my word, it may very well be.
No, I understand that.
And that being the case, if there were indicia triggered that might indicate extra scheduler rating would be appropriate, appellant may very well then undergo.
But appellant's point is, if I'm not mistaken, at least with regard to extra scheduler, is that 4.1 and 4.10 require a thorough examination that addresses the impact on ordinary life, and if that thorough examination is not provided, then the board can't properly assess whether it has this significant impact out of the ordinary. Isn't that
Your Honor,
part of that argument?
Your Honor, respectfully disagrees. That sounds like a good way to phrase appellant's argument. That being said, the secretary respectfully submits that 4.10 in the Chapter 4 criteria do not specifically apply to the extra scheduler criteria. Extra scheduler referrals and extra scheduler grants are something akin almost to equity, Your Honor. That being the case, 4.10 would certainly help with a sister provision of Chapter 4, such as TDIU, perhaps, but it does not apply to Chapter 3, at least not directly, Your Honor, Chapter 3 extra scheduler consideration, in the Secretary's opinion.
So if you had a totally inadequate examination that didn't discuss impact on life and that was presented to the board, it did have this mechanical rating for audio, and you get a 10% rating, and the doctors didn't discuss impact, et cetera, never took anything, what facts would the board be assessing for whether or not extra scheduler was appropriate?
The board shouldn't be assessing any facts in that case, Your Honor. The board should be remanding.
Well, what about the duty to assist?
The board should be remanding that case for additional
okay.
Medical attention. But that being said, the procedures that the secretary has in place and requires of his audiologists, in the secretary's view, respectfully do satisfy the requirements of the provisions of Chapter 4 of the regulatory section.
Counsel, I just want to make sure I understand your argument with regard to the relationship of the audio test and 4.10. In your brief on page 19, you say where the ratings are described in terms of specific measurements, as with hearing loss, a description of the level of hearing loss is adequate for the VA to determine the effects on ordinary activity and employment and to apply the rating schedule. That seems to be saying to me that the audio test standing alone meets all the criteria in 4.10, and I just want to make sure that there's not a nuance here that I'm missing.
Your Honor, I think the way that the Secretary sees it is that based on the court's case law, based on Lindemann, the Secretary probably does believe that for review purposes, that is sufficient. That being said, the Secretary's procedures and requirements of its audiologists do require more, and therefore the reports that are generated in every case where there's a compliant examination would have information that could, freestanding, and this is why I said section of record, he could have triggered 3.321B analysis or referral. He did not do so. Your Honors, while the Secretary does, I believe, hold the agency to a higher standard, I think it is possible to read Lindemann, particularly in conjunction with the court's recent decision and more, as saying that perhaps the court has not, in the past at least, required more of the Secretary. In Lindemann, the court seemed to, at least as far as the rating schedule went, endorsed a mechanical application of the rating schedule to the test results. In Moore, the court, having noted that previous cases of Frischia and Beatty, where the regs make a specific occupation relevant, that an opinion on disability's impact on ordinary tasks is appropriate, but then found that it wasn't true in Mr. Moore's case where there was a higher initial rating claim. Further, the court qualified application of the 4.10 factors by stating that their discussion is frequently required as opposed to always required or simply required. Your Honors, it seems that reading Lindemann in conjunction with Moore, there would appear from the court's case law to be the suggestion that, as you said, the statement in the brief is the minimum that the Secretary is expected to do. Now, that being said, the court has been presented 30Bs or through other materials with some of the Secretary's procedures that show that the Secretary requires more than we read the case law to require. Does that make sense, Your Honor?
Thank you. No, that explains it. Thank you.
Okay. And Your Honor, if I just may, reading Lindemann and Moore together, again, the case law suggests that 4.10 criteria per the court may not be required for hearing loss cases because they're satisfied based on the exam, but they are satisfied based on the examination, which includes a history and a spoken word recognition test. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, the Secretary.
Counselor, in your brief, you suggest that this court lacks jurisdiction.
Your Honor,
are you going to abandon that position?
No, Your Honor. Your Honor, to the extent that appellant's scheduler rating and attack on the examination, which is laid out in the rating schedule, that would appear to offend the limits on this court's jurisdiction over what can be considered. And again, this is an area where Congress and the courts have recognized that the Secretary is in, a fairly unique position vis-a-vis opposing counsel and vis-a-vis the court as far as being able to determine.
Well, before you go out there too far, you might want to review the precedential opinion of your general counsel, dated May 17, 2002.
And the general counsel does suggest, Your Honor, or requires that not all of Title of Chapter 4 falls into the rating schedule. However, the Secretary respectfully submits that in this case, unlike most of the rating schedule, where the criteria, again, fall solely within the Secretary's expertise, and this court would not be in a position to review the criteria that the Secretary requires of its for a rating examination to be done for the audiological exams appear to be beyond this court's scope.
I don't recall seeing in your brief the allusion to or the reference to or the citation to this precedential opinion by your general counsel and why it doesn't fit in this circumstance.
It certainly is not in our brief, Your Honor.
All right. Well, I think it's important, isn't it?
Your Honor, I understand why you say that. The Secretary, including the General Counsel, did not believe that this fit within that criteria, but I will certainly, I assure you, I will certainly be looking at that question. And if the General Counsel believes that we have erred there, the Court will certainly hear from the Secretary.
Well, Well, it just seems to me as a general proposition, if you suggest that this court lacks jurisdiction, certainly there are arguments and circumstances where that pertains, but you have internal precedential guidelines that would maybe suggest the opposite result that was not alluded to in your brief.
We do, Your Honor. However, the Federal Circuit has also spoken on the matter in cases like Warner, where the Secretary believes that is the controlling law in this regard.
Our jurisdiction, I believe, is something that this court is very solicitous of, and I believe the Federal Circuit even acknowledges that.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, to the extent that the court has pointed to an error in our briefs, the Secretary apologizes.
I have nothing further.
Thank you.
Your Honors, again, the Secretary respectfully asks the court to affirm the January 7, 2005 BBA decision, except as to COPD initial rate.
Thank you very much. Mr. Orby, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to address a few things that the counsel for the Secretary has raised here before the court. One in particular is dealing with Lindemann and Moore. First and foremost, Lindemann didn't address the arguments presented here. Lindemann merely states the mechanical application. We're not talking about the mechanical application of the rating schedule here. We're talking about the adequacy of the examination. In dealing with Moore, the Secretary has spoken on the matter in the procedural guidelines. If I may read directly from the procedural guidelines, and I do apologize, I have not submitted the entire guidelines in their entirety, but they have been attached to my reply brief, and I'd be happy to provide, I think, perhaps 150 pages when I inundate the court. But
please don't.
Different from a regular examination. The Secretary writes, a CMP disability examination requires diagnoses to prove whether or not a claimed disability actually exists and the functional effects of the disability on the veteran. One page later, what constitutes a complete examination? The examination must include descriptions of signs and symptoms and any limitations of activity or participation posed by the disability or condition. And in this case, the FAST letter that came out on April 24, 2007, I think is only reiterating the requirements of the regulation as well as the procedural guidelines. And therefore, Lindemann doesn't apply to this particular case. I believe Moore doesn't necessarily control this case. The Secretary's regulation, he's spoken to the matter, and we believe that the adequacy of the examination isn't sufficient for this purpose.
Given what you just read to us, how are they not sufficient?
Your Honor, I believe they're not sufficient because it requires the description of the limitations of activity, the functional effects, and the regulation speaks about employment. I think there are several things that are required of the examiner, and I can't ascertain from a lack of information on the examination report. I don't believe the court.
It doesn't say in this manual that the doctors need to go down and a complete list of every possible impact that the disability might have on the veteran, as opposed to just simply writing down what the impact is on the veteran.
No, I understand that, but I believe for anyone to have a decision made by the regional office or the Board of Veterans Appeals would require specific information. Otherwise, it's requiring adjudicators to assume that these things don't exist. And more importantly, again, back to the point of 4.10, the purpose of an examination is to determine the percentage ratings. When the examination doesn't comply with 4.10, it doesn't ascertain the effects of the disability on the ordinary conditions of life, then that...
But I think you're getting two of them mixed up. One is a rating schedule in this case that is based on specific tests required within the rating schedule that say if you do A, B, C, and D and you come out this way, you get this percent. Period. The doctor could talk all day long about other impact, and it isn't going to change that rating schedule. And that's what the Secretary said.
Well, in that case, if they're not going to ascertain, if they're going to stick the individual in a sound-controlled room, then it turns back to the extra scheduler. And I would respectfully disagree with the Secretary's contention that 3.321 is separate and distinct
So if you accept that 4.1 and 4.10 are applicable,
yes,
that type of an exam as required by the regulation should be provided. In this case, it seems like it might have an impact on the extra schedule, whether you can assess whether it should be applied or not. You still come back to, why is this exam defective?
This exam is defective because it's not in compliance with 4.10. It's not in compliance with 4.1.
Right.
And okay. The fact that it's done in unusual circumstances, I think it's recognized that it's done in a sound-controlled room. It's, when you're talking about extra scheduler, it's talking about specifically unusual circumstances. And therefore, sticking Mr. Martinak in that sound-controlled room immediately raises that question.
But the doctor talked to the veteran and discussed what his problems were, his problems were, wrote them down.
I mean, I would have to respectfully disagree that
okay.
We're not sure exactly what the examiner proposed. The FAST letter seems to give more indication as to what they should be doing in greater depth and detail. And that's, I don't believe that this examination carried out that purpose. That basically, we believe that with respect to the pulmonary disability, the court should reverse that, but more so importantly, with respect to the increased rating for the bilateral hearing loss, the court should hold that the examination is unlawful and not in compliance with 4.10. The secretary, it's similar, it's very analogous to what the court did in DeLuca. The court recognized in DeLuca where they looked at limitation of motion and orthopedic disabilities, and the court said it wasn't sufficient just to do one range of motion test. It said you have to consider the regulations 4.40, 4.45, and ascertain the functional loss. And just merely doing this was not sufficient. The same is true here. Just by sticking that individual in the sound controlled room is not in compliance with 4.10. But also more importantly, it's not a part of that examination is not the actual rating schedule. And I think Your Honor is correct that there are certain things that are part of the rating schedule, the percentages, the disabilities, what the secretary determines to be a disability, and what those percentages are.
So you think the court could come in here, take a look at that rating schedule, and say that the audiological examination as required by that particular portion of the schedule, the secretary has abused his discretion?
I'm not suggesting that the court try to strip anything away from the secretary. We're asking the court to ask the secretary to comply with his own regulations, and that includes 4.10.
Looks like none. The case will be submitted. Thank you very much. We will come down and greet counsel.